This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Mark and Mary Beth Harshbarger? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the alleged crime, then offer my analysis. Mark Harshbarger was born on October 11, 1963, and grew up in the state of Pennsylvania. Mary Beth Harshbarger was born on February 19, 1965. Mark and Mary Beth met in the year 2000. They were at a school where Mark was working on a project. He was a contractor. They went fishing together the day after they met. A few months later, Mark left his current lover, who he had been with for 12 years, to be with Mary Beth. The bond that Mark and Mary Beth had appeared to be somewhat based on their shared interest of the outdoors. Specifically, they enjoyed hunting with firearms. Mark and Mary Beth married on June 23, 2001. They incorporated guns into their marriage ceremony. The couple raised a daughter that Mary Beth had from a prior relationship. They also had two children of their own. They built a house in Messhoppen, Pennsylvania. This is a borough located on the Susquehanna River, about 50 minutes northwest of Scranton. Both Mark and Mary Beth stayed active with shooting and hunting. They entered competitions where they would shoot at targets at long ranges. Both of them were considered very good shots. Despite their shared love of the outdoors, not everything was happy in the marriage. Mary Beth had bipolar disorder and was very difficult to get along with. Mark and Mary Beth would argue frequently. She had to discontinue her medication for the bipolar disorder in 2005 due to a pregnancy. She ended up in a mental hospital in Carbondale, Pennsylvania. She was allowed to be admitted voluntarily so that she could keep her right to own guns. In general, if somebody is admitted into a mental health facility involuntarily, they cannot possess firearms or ammunition. People said that Mary Beth was mad at Mark regarding this hospitalization, and she promised never to go in a mental hospital again. Now moving to the timeline of the alleged crime. In September 2006, Mark, Mary Beth, their two youngest children, and Mark's brother Barry traveled from Pennsylvania to Newfoundland and Labrador, Canada. One child was 4 years old and the other child was an infant. The purpose of this trip was to go hunting. The family stayed at a lodge at Buchan's Junction, which is west of Grand Falls, Windsor. This was an expensive trip. It would have normally cost somewhere around $10,000, but Mary Beth was able to negotiate with the hunting lodge to reduce the cost somewhat. She told the lodge owner that the family would sleep in their own camper and prepare their own meals. During the hunting trip, Mark killed a few animals, including a bear. On September 14, 2006, the last day of the hunting expedition, the family was in the guide's Chevrolet pickup truck on a logging road. Mark's brother Barry was dropped off at a stand as Mark and Mary Beth went to another location. Mark and the guide left Mary Beth and the children in the pickup truck. The plan was to kill a moose or a bear. Mark and the guide went into the woods to flush out the animals. Mary Beth stayed in the bed of the pickup truck and waited. She was hoping to kill an animal that would come into view. So Mark and the guide would flush out the animal and Mary Beth would shoot it from the pickup truck. She was armed with a .30-06 Weatherby Mark V Deluxe and a light gathering scope. Mark and the guide did not have any success. They started walking back to the pickup truck. They became separated when the guide stopped to urinate in the woods. Mark continued to walk toward the pickup truck alone. When Mark was about 200 feet away from the pickup truck, Mary shot him one time in the abdomen and killed him. This was at 7:55 p.m., 24 minutes after sunset. The guide heard the shot, as well as a scream. He ran to Mark's location. According to the guide, here's what happened next. After discovering that Mark was dead, he stood up and looked toward the pickup truck. Mary Beth was standing by the side of the truck. The guide called out to her, "Did you shoot your rifle?" She replied, "Yes." The guide said, "What did you shoot at?" She responded, "I shot a bear. Did I get him?" The guide said, "No, you got Mark." Mary Beth asked if Mark was okay. The guide said, "No, he's dead." At this point, Mary Beth danced around the road screaming, "I shot my husband. I shot my love." She claimed that she thought her husband was a bear. The guide, Mary Beth, and the two children departed the area. They picked up Mark's brother Barry on the way. They eventually made it to somewhere where they could call the police. After the police responded, they interviewed Mary Beth. She explained to them how her husband's death was an accident. They believed her and cleared her of wrongdoing within 36 hours. The surviving members of the family returned to Pennsylvania. Not long after this, Mark's brother Barry left his wife and moved in with Mary Beth. This seemed a little bit suspicious to Mark's other family members, but that wasn't the only problem they had with Mary Beth. They viewed her as a bully who had anger problems. She was generally not liked by Mark's family. They felt as though she was not expressing the correct emotions over Mark's death. She seemed unmoved, uncaring, and unconcerned. Mary Beth kept her children away from Mark's family and appeared to move on quickly with her life. She even resumed competing in shooting competitions. Mark's family members pressured the authorities in Pennsylvania, who in turn contacted the authorities in Canada. The police in Canada reopened the investigation. In addition to all the indicators that Mary Beth had anger problems, the police discovered that she had a criminal history. In 1992, she had been convicted of assault and spent a day in jail.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nordfiliale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
On April 20, 2008, Mary Beth was charged with criminal negligence causing death and carelessly using a firearm. The first charge carried a minimum 4-year sentence and a maximum sentence of life in prison. The Canadian government requested extradition. Mary Beth fought it for quite a while, but eventually the authorities in Canada prevailed. In May 2010, Mary Beth was extradited to Newfoundland and Labrador. She sat in jail awaiting her trial. Mark's brother, Barry, and a babysitter watched Mary Beth's children in Pennsylvania. Mary Beth's Canadian attorney did not think that a jury in Canada would be sympathetic to an American defendant. He asked for a trial by judge. The trial started in September of 2010. The judge found Mary Beth Harshbarger not guilty of all charges. She quickly returned to the United States and resumed her life. One might think that Mark's brother Barry would have been excited to see Mary Beth, but it doesn't appear as though that was the case. He actually had developed a relationship with the babysitter, and eventually they ran off together. Barry filed a temporary protection from abuse order against Mary Beth, claiming that he feared for his life. He said that she had pointed a loaded rifle at him. At a hearing, a judge found Barry's claims were inaccurate exaggerations. I guess this is as opposed to accurate exaggerations. It's not clear. Mary Beth continued to keep her children away from Mark's family. It appears as though she was able to live comfortably after receiving money from Mark's life insurance policy. Now moving to my analysis. Many members of Mark's family believe that Mary Beth murdered Mark and escaped responsibility. The authorities in Canada did not believe that they could get a conviction for murder, and Mary Beth was never charged with that crime. Prosecutors thought they had a good chance of convicting Mary Beth of criminal negligence causing death, but of course they were incorrect. It would seem they were overly optimistic. This leads me to the question, did Mary Beth commit murder, or was she criminally negligent in any way? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Mary Beth was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Mary Beth had a criminal history that involved assault. Some people described her as controlling, violent, and having difficulty controlling her temper. She was known to have arguments with her husband, Mark. His brother said that Mary Beth slapped Mark on one occasion. A few days before the fateful trip, Mark allegedly told a friend that he suspected Mary Beth would kill him one day with a firearm. He joked, saying, at least it would be quick. Mary Beth appeared to thoroughly enjoy spending a lot of money. She bought vehicles, furniture, and guns. There's the sense that she was wasting money. Just a few months before Mark was shot to death by Mary Beth, his life insurance was increased to $500,000. This was much higher than the policy was set at before. When the police questioned Mary Beth about the life insurance, she knew the phone numbers for the insurance agents off the top of her head. When looking at the circumstances of the shooting, Mary Beth's actions were clearly unsafe. Mary Beth was an experienced hunter who was familiar with rifles. She knew it was her responsibility to identify a target before firing. During a reenactment of the shooting, investigators looking through the scope could only see a dark mass. Why would Mary Beth fire on a target that looked like a dark mass? It would be impossible to identify that. Investigators said it was too dark to hunt safely. It was 24 minutes past sunset and only 6 minutes from when it would have become illegal to hunt. When Mary Beth pulled the trigger, she knew that her husband was in the woods and that he would be returning. She also knew that he was wearing dark clothing and not wearing an orange vest. Mary Beth admitted to investigators that she should not have fired the shot. Investigators said that they would have not taken the shot under the same circumstances. The situation with Mark fleshing out a bear so that Mary Beth could kill it doesn't make any sense. This is not how people hunt bears. Generally, when hunting a bear, a hunter remains still, like on a tree stand or in a ground blind. They don't try to chase the bears through the woods into the view of another hunter. That tactic would almost never be successful, and it would be extremely dangerous. Mary Beth's description of the bear that she supposedly saw 200 feet from her suggested that she believed the bear was walking on its hind legs. Bears rarely do that. After Mark's death, Mary Beth did not seem to have any problems moving on. She quickly entered into a romantic relationship with Mark's brother. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Mark had shot a bear the day before he was killed by Mary Beth. Perhaps his wife was desperate to kill a bear herself, and she let her competitive spirit get out of control. This is still negligent, but it would not be consistent with murder. One officer thought that it was plausible that Mary Beth may have felt that she was shooting a bear. The guide said it was not impossible that Mary Beth thought Mark was a bear. This whole situation with Mark walking back to the pickup truck alone would be challenging to configure. How would Mary Beth have known the guide was going to stop in the woods to urinate? The owner of the hunting lodge claimed that Mark might have looked like a bear, noting that he was wearing navy blue coveralls. I wonder under what circumstances this hunting lodge owner has encountered bears. I think that one could argue that very few bears wear navy blue coveralls. Usually, people who wear coveralls have physically demanding jobs, and most bears are unemployed. The lodge owner also said that Mark looked like a bear because he had been growing his beard for 2 or 3 days. I'm starting to question whether this lodge owner had ever actually seen a bear. An expert witness testified that based on how the bullet struck Mark, he was most likely leaning over. This makes him look more like a bear. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I think that Mary Beth was guilty? In my opinion, it's clear that her actions were criminally negligent. I'm surprised that the judge in Canada found her not guilty. It really doesn't make any sense. Mary Beth knew it was her responsibility to identify a target before pulling the trigger. If it was too dark to do that, then it was her responsibility to refrain from firing the rifle. As far as the theory that Mary Beth was guilty of murder, one could argue that maybe all this talk of failing to identify the target was inaccurate. Maybe Mary Beth did identify her target, and that is precisely why she fired. Under the circumstances, it's difficult to know whether this was murder or not. As I mentioned, this whole situation with Mark walking back to the pickup truck would have been difficult to set up. However, the timing of the life insurance policy is highly suspicious, and most of the time, when somebody points a gun at another person and pulls the trigger, they intend to kill that person. My guess is that Mary Beth probably did not deliberately kill her husband. I think she was reckless, and I think she should have gone to prison, but I'm not quite convinced that this was murder. Perhaps this was a situation where Mary Beth was open to the idea of murder, but not planning it. like when she saw a dark, shadowy figure walking out of the woods, she thought something like, if it's a bear, great. If it's my husband, that's okay too. Maybe she was indifferent. I'm not sure. This case glides on a razor's edge between innocence and guilt. Now moving to my final thoughts. As I mentioned, I believe this case involved recklessness, despite the verdict in Canada. It's possible that mental health factors contributed to the recklessness. One thing that really stood out to me is how Mary Beth was allowed to keep her right to own guns because she was given the option of voluntarily being admitted to a mental health facility. I've seen this many times in my career. A client is sent to an inpatient care facility, and it's clear that they are going to be committed one way or the other. At this point, they are given this choice: be committed voluntarily or involuntarily. There is no reason for the client to select the involuntary route, because if they do, they will lose many of their rights, including the right to possess firearms. An involuntary commitment is almost as bad as a permanent criminal record. This highlights an absurd reality. The client is clearly dangerous enough to qualify for involuntary commitment, but they're allowed to sidestep the system and maintain ownership of guns. The logic of the system is that if the client can agree to voluntary commitment, they understand their limits. They appreciate when it's time to ask for help. They don't really need to be prevented from owning guns because they can make that type of recognition. I can appreciate this theory, but I think the system needs to be revised. Perhaps the relationship between mental health and gun ownership should not be balanced on one involuntary commitment episode that can often be sidestepped, but rather based on a more sophisticated assessment, one that might prevent an incident like the tragedy we see in this case.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Studium und Praxis in einem? Das geht mit einem dualen Studium bei Mainova. Bei uns lernst du an coolen Partnerhochschulen und arbeitest an zukunftsweisenden Projekten der Energieversorgung mit. Danach kannst du gleich loslegen mit einem Bachelor in der Tasche und Praxiserfahrung, auf die du bauen kannst. Starte voller Energie in deine berufliche Zukunft. Bewirb dich jetzt unter mainova.de/karriere. Mainova, da steckt mehr dahinter.